Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. So today we have for you someone who is a pretty valuable member of the BJJ community in Australia. Well, I think so anyway. So here on Roll or Die, we like to embrace the community. We're here for the community. And this guy here has done something pretty amazing. He's put together a map of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools all around Australia and New Zealand, I think. So we're going to chat with him about that. He's an old friend of mine. I know him from back in the day when we both used to train at Perkins together. He's a brown belt under Robbie Singh at Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and he is Cameron Byrne. Thanks for joining us, Cameron.
Awesome. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Cameron. So first question, actually, we had a guy on the other day, and he started a business in his blue belt phase, and it kind of took off, but it took a long time. Did this idea come up in your blue belt phase? Does this confirm the theory that people...
Oh, man. I think I was a purple belt because this would have been, I think it was 2019 was when I first started it. And so that would have been a purple belt phase because I think I just got back from London. It was pre-pandemic, so probably purple belt. So I think I've broken the rule.
Oh, wow. Okay. Throw the theory out now. Yeah.
Because there's all those stories about like blue belts that like do their, they open up Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu thong brands and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu belt brands. And like this. I don't think I went through that phase, but yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it that got you? Was it your travels yourself that put this idea into your head or what got going?
It's funny because like, I'd say the one good thing is like because I'm half Croatian, I make it over to Europe relatively regularly, and it was great that I could go.
My last guest was also Croatian. What's going on?
Oh, really?
Vlahovic is also Croatian.
Lots of Croatians doing jiu-jitsu, actually, to be honest. It's really strange. It must be, I don't know, like breaking each other. but it's funny. So when I do go over to Europe, it's always great that I can just go into any academy, not really kind of understand the language sometimes, depending on where I am, and just go into a school and just kind of broken English say I want to join and just watch the movements and try. You obviously don't get the same experience as actually being able to ask questions and stuff. That was always a really positive thing for me. Also, a lot of the jobs I've had recently, I've been able to go interstate. Like I went to Sydney about 2 weeks ago and just went into a random club and just had a bit of a chat there. So there's always been that kind of sense of community across boundaries, and people are always very accepting of that. And so that's the kind of genesis in my mind around it. And I'll be honest, to Anton's point around like, you know, did you start this during a blue belt thing? I think every jits person kind of goes, what's a business idea I could do around it? And you kind of get stuck on, you can make a gi, you can make a rashi, you get harassed by people online with, you know, from various suppliers from various countries and stuff. And yeah, I just thought there's nothing that I could do that I want to do that could be done well or that could be done better than the guys that are already doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of a techie nerd kind of person. And I thought, well, I like geospatial mapping because that's what I do for some of my work, depending on, like, I think it's a great data visualization of that stuff. And so I thought, well, what could I do around that that would actually fit around the jiu-jitsu community? And first thing was some sort of directory of some sort. I thought instead of actually making a dedicated website or anything, let's just go with the most basic version, which is basically tell me you've got a jiu-jitsu club and what information you want, and I'll manually update it. Now, that was meant to be a minimum viable product, something that would just temporarily get me in there, and I just haven't gotten around to actually automating it in any way, because long term what I'd love to have is some sort of BJJ directory globally that you could enter in. You have a profile, you can enter in who's the head instructor, you can maintain it, modify it, and like longer, like that obviously has costs associated with it, not have to figure out monetization of that without screwing everyone over. But that's the kind of thing that I was thinking, that longer term you can have some sort of directory where people actually manage their own profiles effectively.
Yeah.
Can you share it, Anton, just for people that might be watching as well? So I put the link in the chat.
Yeah. Well, should I share it in the chat? Or sorry, should I share it in the meeting now? Or should I?
Yeah, share it now so people could see. Maybe some people might not know what we're actually talking about.
And so, Kim, one of the things that before we started this meeting, you were saying that, you know, I can't find the link. That's one of the main things that I want to fix. Like if you can't go into Google and type in BJJ clubs in Australia and see the map, right now you've got to dig into a random link on a Facebook group and find it that way. It's just not the right way to go about it.
Mm. Yeah. Look at this, though. It's really cool, man. Look, you've got New Zealand, Australia.
Yeah. And I've tried to group similar affiliations together. So you'll see at the top on the left-hand side, Wilmachado BJJ is the biggest. They've got 47 clubs in Australia, or of those that want to call out the affiliation, I should call out.
Yeah.
We've got about 689 clubs across Australia and New Zealand. I'm trying to keep a pretty strict data structure to make sure it's nice and easily searchable, so you can actually search by either the club name or by the affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the, if you just click on random ones within that map, you've got social media profiles. Some people got their opening hours, some people have got if they're female focused or self-defense focused or whatever it might be. So it's been great in that way. And I won't take credit, by the way, for the photos. That's just straight from Google Maps. But it's been a great little kind of side hobby that I only have to update once a year, which is great.
That's beautiful. And have you felt, as far as the community, do they really lean into this and get you the data efficiently?
They love it. It's a bit like, I think some people that are more computer savvy understand that I'm trying to create consistent data, but some people are more just like, hey, go onto Facebook and find my social media and put it on there. It's like, you can just send me a link, but I'll do the hard work. It's all right.
Yeah. They make you do the heavy lifting, reverse delegation.
Yeah. Yeah. But to be fair, everyone's like, it's ridiculous how not just accepting, but how helpful people are. Hey, this club closed down, or this one's being renamed. Like, people actually do engage across it more than what I would have expected.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have said that they've used it on interstate trips for work and stuff like that to find a close one. It would be great to have some sort of rating system, but it's probably a bit hard to kind of implement that. This is just a pretty basic, just custom Google map that you just edit. It's not too hard.
So are you saying that pretty much everybody that's on there, almost everyone has contacted you to tell you about this club? Like 600 odd people or whatever.
And sometimes it might be a club owner. Like, it might be, like, I can't remember, like, I think SJJA, they specifically said, here's our website with 16 sites on there or whatever it is, use these particular ones. And so sometimes it's just one message and you get 20 sites on there and just copy and paste. It's not too hard. But other ones, it's literally small little garage jiu-jitsu clubs you got to add in there.
Mm. Yeah. But that's awesome. Like, that's what the community's about. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And one thing I really discovered for myself, I don't know if you've discovered this as well, but some things need no marketing and they are the golden products. Like, I have this event called the Monthly Masters, and I literally just put an event up and the mats are packed every time. It's just the masters, they show up, they push it. They are asking me when it is. And that means that that event is a golden event. It was an accident. I was in my blue belt phase. And I was like, I want to do something for the jiu-jitsu community. So I put this thing on and then it just kept going and going. And it's like 62 events in now. But when you discover something like this, that just kind of like the community pushes it, it's like a magical discovery because it's rare.
It's almost like you've broken the inertia and then that momentum behind it just keeps pushing. It's like just a ball rolling down a hill after that.
But some things never get that inertia. That's what I guess I'm trying to say. Like, some people have come up with, I don't know, let's say sanitary mat soap or something like that. That's like, do this for the jiu-jitsu. And they just, like, they never get anywhere with it.
And it's funny. And that's why, like, you know, in my professional role, I'm a product manager. And the whole concept is make a minimum viable product, test it in market, see if there's a market fit or not. And so for me, it's funny, the first year that I put it up, it ended up just blowing up year one. I'm like, there's something here. Even if it's people that won't be using it, people want to help out with building it for other people.
Mm.
And so it was an immediate market fit there. It's probably more just that time to develop this would be a huge effort, because I'd want to do it properly, where you actually have, like I said, the profile, set it up, you can put in class times, you can put in what your focus is, do you have self-defense focus, do you have kickboxing, like all that level of detail, and that starts blowing out. Because then you start going, well, is this a BJJ club map, or is it also an MMA club map? If it's MMA, is it Muay Thai as well? Do you include all martial? Like, it starts becoming bigger than Ben-Hur. So it's like, you got to start somewhere. I've got to do it eventually, but it's just one of those things that I'll probably be kicked along when we can until I can get something sorted.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, that's fantastic. But it's a little bit like this podcast, yeah, Anton? Like, true. Similar thing, you know. We started the same way and it's just kept going and it's grown and grown. And, yeah, here we are now 200 plus episodes in. So, yeah.
That's true. Two lucky discoveries, Kim. That was just from a phone call, a friendly chat, catch up.
Recorded and then, yeah, here we are.
So sorry to be the interviewer for a second, but how do you guys train at the same club? How did you guys first?
Yeah, we used to. So this was similar. So like Anton said, we used to do a phone call. I think it was on a Wednesday morning or something. Like as I drove to work, he and I would talk for about half an hour or so. And he said, these are really good. We should record these and release them. And I said, who the hell wants to listen to this? And then he had the idea that we have another person, a guest on, and chat with them and record that and make it as a podcast. So, and this was kind of just before the pandemic. So I think that in some ways for us, the pandemic was very beneficial because it helped to connect the community through this podcast. So, you know, you couldn't see your friends, but you could see them here on the podcast. So,
It's fine. Confession, I did actually start a podcast, and I think it was in my blue belt phase called Fist Up Podcast. And I did. It's funny, same kind of thing where, like, when you reach out to people, people are very willing to kind of give you their time and have a chat. I actually managed to get Curtis Seander on there randomly. I ended up just pinging him on Instagram just saying like, hey, don't know whether you'd want to do it, but, you know, feel free. And I ended up having – it was the most embarrassing thing though because I feel like I ramped up my swear words throughout the entire podcast because he was just –
podcaster.
And fuck that. Oh, man. He was a character, man. It was hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. I feel like that phase is kind of passing in the podcasting a little
bit. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny though.
So Cameron, tell us, we always ask this of all, I guess, like tell us how you started in jiu-jitsu. What got you interested? Where'd you start?
So I suppose just to preface that, I was the most, like literally the most unathletic person you can possibly imagine. I never did any sport ever. I went to a high school where it was compulsory to do sport, and I told cricket I was in hockey I was in cricket, and just got lost in the system and never did a day of sport for 7 years. So literally anything you can think of to avoid any kind of physical activity. Wow. And so I had a girlfriend at the time who was doing some boxer size, and I thought, okay, I'll go to that and give it a shot. So I went to I can't remember the place. It's a boxing gym in a fighter's factory in Blackburn. It was more boxer size than actual boxing, but at least it kind of got me hooked on exercise. And I was about 67 kilos back then, 6'2". I was tiny. I was skinny and just malnourished and bad. And so that exercise naturally just drove my appetite up. That appetite ended up putting some weight on me. Then I thought I want to put some more weight on. Started going to the gym. Just that's the kind of natural way that I got into it. Mm-hmm. And then I had seen a few episodes of the events of the UFC. It was back when Chuck Liddell was in there, and it was more just that everyone's introduction to basically UFC at the time. I won't actually mention the club because it was actually a bad experience. I went to a club and it was horrible. It was maybe 20 people. I was first person, like first class there, and they just fed me to a brown belt that was 40 kilos heavier and sweaty, who mounted me and was not trying to help me in any way to escape or even just try to promote anything. It was really, really bad. Probably one of the worst experiences you can have as a new entrant.
Mm.
So that put me off for probably about a month or so. And I thought, I'll give it one more crack and I'll try to find a different place because maybe it was just a cultural thing at the time. Found Perkins Jiu-Jitsu back in 2011, I think it was. No, couldn't be 2011. 2012, 2013. So it's around that kind of time frame.
Yeah.
Started training with Dion and Jody when they moved to their place in Ringwood East. And I think that's where we started meeting then.
Yeah.
Stayed with them until about 2016. And then after that, I moved to the UK for a year and trained at New School BJJ while I was just over there for a year just for work. Came back to Australia and decided to switch to Robbie's Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Burwood Club, primarily because I wanted to focus on self-defense specifically. I had done a few competitions and stuff at Perkins Jiu-Jitsu, but competition wasn't really the focus for me. Like the entire reason why I wanted to get into Jiu-Jitsu is because I wanted to be able to defend myself. And I felt that watching some of the content from Hiron and Henna made a lot of sense around, you know, you train at a competition club, you probably could beat 9 out of 10 people that don't know how to train, but at the same time, it doesn't have that self-defense focus, and having that lens over things makes a big difference. So for me, I've Perkins Jiu-Jitsu was absolutely fantastic. The quality of instruction there was phenomenal. It was just a different focus that I wanted to dedicate myself to.
Awesome. I'm interested to know, like, how did you distinguish after that bad first experience that you wanted to try again, and it wasn't BJJ's fault, it was one experience's fault? How did you reconcile that?
I think I was probably a little bit stubborn, probably more than anything else, where I thought there's obviously something to BJJ, otherwise it wouldn't be getting as big as it is, and it wouldn't be utilized by multiple MMA fighters, well, every MMA fighter at the time, because back then you couldn't be an MMA fighter without it. And so I think it was just an acknowledgement that it's probably hard to do, but it's probably not, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily not something for me. And the entire philosophy back then was, you know, smaller person beating a bigger person with technique, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that now, and I'd be curious to hear you guys, but I think if I had me now and cloned me, but with 20 kilos of muscle on me, I think cloned me with 20 kilos of muscle is going to beat me. So technique will only take you so far. There is a physical side of that. And so, but back then it was that kind of ethos that kind of drew me into it.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Awesome.
And you mentioned about self-defense. Have you ever had to use your jiu-jitsu?
There was one time where it's funny. So there's one time that I was probably only about a year in, and we're on Queen Street, and a friend of mine got bashed in the club, and they were dragging the guys who had bashed him out of the club, and one of my mates is like, "We're going to go and get him." So it's probably not the most positive kind of story, but basically we went up to the security guard and said, "That's our friend being pulled out," even though it was the guy that had beaten up our mates, and just a massive fight erupted on Queen Street in the city. There wasn't much time to actually do anything though, I suppose. I basically kept distance and just made sure that all my mates were all right, because I wasn't going to get jumped or you know, king hit or anything like that. And within about 30 seconds, the cops are macing everyone. So we all got pepper sprayed in the face, and that was pretty much the end of the fight there. The only other times I've actually used it is actually just to prevent, this is a bit random, but when I have a few drinks, and I don't drink as much anymore, back in my day I did, I don't like people fighting. And so if there was in a club and people pushing and shoving and stuff, I'd actually get in the middle of two strangers and try to stop them, which is not a good idea.
Two dogs fighting, it's like a no-no.
Literally. And it's so dumb, because both people think that you're the other guy's friend. So you're getting in the middle going, stop, and this guy's going, oh, this guy's mate. So you're literally the worst position. But for some reason, I just kept doing that. So there's a few times where I would come up behind people and pull them back, and usually buy them a drink and just be like, just let it settle, like, don't stress. But that's mostly what I've ever done. I've never had to use it before. The only time that – and there was a situation in August of last year where we had a break into the house. We had six people come through our house with my wife and kids asleep, and I had to chase them out. And it was a fallen situation, but luckily didn't end up resulting in anything physical.
Wow. Can I share a story, actually? This is true. This happened to me this happened to me this week. I was in Frankston doing a meeting run, and I was in between meetings. It was one of those hot days. I thought, I'm going to go to the beach, have a swim. So I'm in my bathers, I'm hopping out, and I see this group of teens crossing the road, and they kind of do this thing as if they're putting something underneath a car that's on the road, dad and then, you know, his kids in the back, and they're just messing with this car and this driver. They're not doing anything, right? They're just being teens. And I'm just watching them. I'm not even like going to do anything or say anything. And one of them turns to me and he says, "What are you going to do about it, mate?" And they're like, in that moment, I'm like, well, I'm a brown belt. I could, you know, like, I'm thinking those things. But before I have no intention of bashing teens either. But then and there's way too many of them, but before I could say or think or even respond, his mate turns to him and goes, "Leave him alone, mate. He's old."
Oh, my God.
It was like this.
That really deflates your ego, because in your mind, you're building yourself up going, I'm a brown belt. I can handle myself. It's like, this old bloke's fine.
So I'll probably never get to use my jiu-jitsu in the wild because people just think I'm old now.
And I know, like, when you start jiu-jitsu, or especially, you know, when your early days or blue belt, would you, everybody loves to, you know, talk about how great jiu-jitsu is, bring all their friends and family in. How about you? Have you brought anyone along to jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so, and you might actually know one of them, Meesh. You know Meesh Hall?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
also been on this podcast.
Yeah.
And just had a baby. Shout out to Mish.
Yeah, yes. Shout out to Mish. Yeah. So Mish and I worked at a chemical company for a few years, and I ended up bringing her in. She's doing better than me, basically. She's kicking ass. Like,
So she won a world title.
So Mish,
world title.
She's killing it.
Yeah.
And the other person, I've got my brother-in-law involved. I've got my one of my best friend's husbands involved. My happiest one is my uncle, though. Mm. So, and I think you also know him, Dragon. Yeah. So yeah. Dragon is my uncle from my mum's side. He used to do karate. Yeah, I know. And now he's black belt. So he's the Black Dragon.
Oh, that's
great. He did karate for a long time back when he was a kid, and he loved the martial arts culture. And when he saw me doing it, I was probably about a year and a half in or so, and I showed him a few moves, showed him a triangle, showed him an armbar, just basic stuff. And he's like, shit, that actually does work. And he's stuck with Perkins. He's got his black belt faster than I have. Like, he's just an absolute beast. Yeah. And I've got a lot of respect for him because he's an older guy. He started when he was in his, early 50s, and he's gotten his black belt towards his 60s. It's phenomenal.
He's 65 or something now. Yeah,
65. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So yeah,
Anton, you're not old. You're not old, Anton.
According to the teens in Frankston, I'm old.
We're all old. 25-year-old is old.
Hey, credit for the guy to say he's old. Don't pick him as well. He's been brought up.
That's true.
Pick up your elders.
So I'm interested to know, actually, that's a good point, because I want more people in my life to do jiu-jitsu. And like, I advertise, like I have a community class. I do all sorts of things to try and get people to come. And it's hard. It's really hard. I know anyone trying to build a club, build a class, anything like that, because I'm experiencing firsthand what that's like. And just having people try something that's sweaty, intimate, close, like there has to be ways to do it. So how did you get people around you to do jiu-jitsu?
That's a good point. So Mish, I can't even remember. I just said,
That's right. Tell me the secret sauce to getting a Mish. I need a Mish.
Mish is one of a kind. Mish, I think we were just working together, and she just saw what I was doing, and she just I said, you're more than welcome to come along. She came along and she just killed it. She absolutely loved it. And just fell in love. She was already doing I think she was doing some strongman stuff. She was very physically active, and I think she was doing some running, and so it wasn't much of a leap for her to just go, I'll give this a crack, and she ended up loving it, especially after you kind of show her some of the effectiveness of some of the techniques, and you get over that initial weirdness of person-to-person contact. I will say though that probably with my uncle, obviously there was none of that kind of weirdness, because my uncle, we're pretty okay with each other. The one thing that I will call out that I've found amazing is at Gracie Burwood, their introduction to jiu-jitsu is very structured, and it's for, and you know that cliche, jiu-jitsu is for everyone. I think it really embodies that. Mm. That they have a very structured intro to any person who's starting new. They give context about why things are important. I think you probably would have seen Henna do those introductions of you go on the ground, I'm on top, this is what a bad situation is. There is a very defined structure behind it that people don't know about, framing the technique, forecasting it, things of that nature, that really structures the class. And that's why I think Robbie's club is so successful, is because he has made it accessible to everyone. He's got older people, younger people, people with disabilities, but doesn't matter what role you're in. You could be a professional lawyer and you don't want to have a black eye, and you're not going to get a black eye at Robbie's club. And so I think that making it as accessible as possible, if I contrast that to my first experience where I was just straight into a rolling situation with a brown belt that's heavier, more athletic, knows way more than me, versus being handheld through the experience, at least in the initial phases, I think that was the most important part.
Yeah, awesome, man. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
And credit to Dion and Jody as well, even though they didn't follow the same structure as what Gracie University did, they definitely did make an effort that every person that came in was matched with an appropriately expert person that wouldn't hurt them and would talk them through it and guide them. So that was a big help as well.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. No, those first few sessions of jiu-jitsu, it's chaos for people, to be doing something like that. So it just I know you don't want to mention the name of it, but is that club, that initial club you went to, still around? Are they still?
No, they were gone within a year.
Yeah. Wow. It's so important. I mean, and it's changed heaps. Like when I started, it was quite different, but now they have, you know, introductory syllabuses, and people really do manage to get their hand held a lot through those first few months. It's just, I think that is the difference between people sticking with it and not sticking with it. Because you're probably the exception that you had a bad experience, but you still came back. But how many people drop out when they don't?
I would love to see stats of how many people actually come in for a class and how many people retained. It's actually a thing that I've always thought in the back of my head, because I would say the good clubs are like, what's that saying? Like, we're not in the jiu-jitsu people. We're not in the jiu-jitsu business teaching people. We're in the people business teaching jiu-jitsu. And it's one of those things, you got to put the person first. You can't look at it as you're a jiu-jitsu club. You're a community. You're a connection for people to be able to come to take their mind off what they're currently, I don't know about you guys, but I can't focus on my mortgage or a bad day at work or my kid being annoying during the day if I'm getting strangled. Like, you have to focus on that one thing. It's literally a form of meditation for me, like to not have to think about anything else.
It's my therapy.
I agree with that. Having said that, I find that I do have good days and bad days depending on what else is going on in my life. Like, yes, I do block it out for that time, and it is a beautiful escape. But if I am dealing with a lot, if I'm multitasking, when I do get to the gym, I'm kind of drained and I don't roll well, I'm kind of exhausted. And sometimes I can beat myself up a bit for that, but you're right. Like, it is the ultimate kind of forget about the world for a moment, but I can go in like garbage in, garbage out. Basically, if I rock up at the gym in a garbage state, I'm not going to, white belts will be tapping me. So I'm just going to
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
But no matter what, like, you still nearly always feel better after training than before. Whatever
always.
Happened.
Always.
Even if you're the nail and
every
never
time.
Was the hammer, you know, it's still always better. But it's sometimes, I hear what you're both saying, like, it's still hard to separate all that stuff, to like put all those troubles aside, but you have to, because otherwise, you're going to get choked, you're going to get joint locked, whatever. So,
100%.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. So what's next? What's next for you, brother? Like, when is black belt time? Do you have that on your horizon? Is that important to you?
It's important to me, but at the same time, like, I'll be completely honest, I've had to take a bit of a pause from jiu-jitsu for probably about the last year or so. Mm-hmm. Just with, I've got a new baby, I've got a new house, a new job and all that stuff. So I haven't been able to dedicate the time that I need to jits. I'll probably be the longest black belt ever, but I don't really care. It's not really about that, to be honest. It's one of those things that when I've got the time to focus back on it, I will. It's funny, because I remember when, you know, over the last kind of 12 years or so that I've actually been doing jits, I remember seeing people leave jits and I was like, man, you were a really good like blue belt, or you're a good purple. If you just stuck with it, you would have been able to. And I could never in my mind at the time kind of understand why people would be dropping out when they loved it as well. Yeah. Like, it wasn't an injury, it wasn't that they had lost the fire, it was just they dropped out, they couldn't do it. Now, as a dad and kind of having all these additional responsibilities, you've got a lot more empathy for people that do drop out. It's not a critique of them leaving, it's more just like, okay, I understand where you're coming from now.
Interesting. Yeah.
So tell us about your kids.
Go on, Kim.
How old are your kids?
I've got a little Henry who is 3.5, and I've got Isla who is 14 months. So they're still very, very young. And it's just that phase. It's just, you know, I can't do morning classes because I'm waking up and helping get them ready for the day. Yeah. Can't do night classes because you're doing dishes and doing dinner and sometimes doing work after hours. So it's just really hard to find any time.
Mm. 100%. And it's not a criticism to it. It's just the way it is, that I think most jiu-jitsu gyms have classes that aren't really family-friendly times in the evenings. Like, it's, you know. 5 till 9 or whatever, that's the time that your toddlers and your babies really need you. So, I mean, hats off also to all those jiu-jitsu wives who are at
100%
home while their men or husbands, vice versa, if the women are on the mat and they're at home holding down the fort with the kids, because I've got three kids. Like, that's chaos that time.
And I'll be honest as well, like, when you don't go back for a while, it's noticeable. Like, when I went to Sydney, I hadn't trained for about a few months, and I ended up going to the Sydney gym, and I got absolutely destroyed by and it's one of those things, like, you just got to be okay with the fact that, you know, some people are probably training 4 or 5, like, back when I was a year or two in, I was 4 or 5 days a week. I was doing strength and conditioning classes. I was probably in a lot better shape and a lot more focus. And, you know, you can recall the techniques you just learned in the week previous, that kind of thing. Yeah. When you start getting to the point where you're going once a week, once every few weeks, you're just basing it based off your almost like body recall as opposed to specific technique.
Muscle memory sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. You're just doing that as opposed to a very focused and technical role.
Yeah. One of the things that I do.
Just going to be okay with that.
Yeah, one of the things that I do, and this is not directed at you, but I don't understand. I do understand that people, you know, have to take time off and quit, but the way I've gotten around it in my world is anything I love doing, I become a producer, not a consumer of. And when I become a producer of it, I can always justify doing it. So if I want to keep doing jiu-jitsu, no matter what is going on in my life, I become a jiu-jitsu teacher. You know, then I have to show up and I have to do it. And if I have a baby, which would be very unlikely, but if I have a baby, that baby's coming to jiu-jitsu, you know what I mean? But I'm still going to produce. When I become a producer in something, I can always justify to myself and everybody around me, and I can keep that thing in place no matter what. So it's like this protective shell I've created around myself. Anything I love, I become a producer in, and I build it into my life. That's my mentality.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it's fun, and it's funny, like before I kind of went on this small kind of hiatus from jits, my son was about 2.5 or so. And Robbie said, he's normally meant to start at like 4, but if you want to bring him in and he can have a play, it's fine. Just let him come and watch the class. And he sat in the kids' bullyproof program and he was listening to the teacher and everything. And they do a kind of like a little ceremony where anyone who's new, they get someone to go and introduce themselves as a friend to the kid. And so, you know, you've got all the parents sitting on the side, you've got probably about, I don't know, 100 kids in that class. It's ridiculous. And one of the kids comes up and goes, "Oh, hi, my name's blah. What's your name?" And he said, "Henry." And the kid goes, "Oh, round of applause for Henry." And everyone started clapping and Henry's face lit up and he was jumping. And I was like, this is the best introduction to jiu-jitsu I could have ever imagined. So I can't wait till he hits that critical age where he wants to try it. He already plays around with me on the ground and I show him a few bits and pieces and he's going to be better than me as a teenager, but still.
Yeah. Awesome, man. That's brilliant. Yeah, imagine awesome. Everybody just clapping you at that age and you're like,
dude,
feel at home. This, I could get used to this.
Core memory.
Yeah, that's so great.
That's fantastic. Great. Yeah, now the next probably 6 months or so are still going to be a bit hectic for you. And, you know, they never stop really taking time, your kids. But I think after, especially your youngest gets closer to 2, maybe you'll be
great.
You know, like able to relate.
Right now when they're this young, it's they're very dependent. You're doing everything for them. But as they start feeding themselves, you probably get a bit of time and they, you know, want to put their clothes on themselves, little basic things. So it's just a busy time at the moment, but it'll resolve itself eventually.
Awesome, man.
That's it.
Awesome. Great. Well, man, I really, really have gotten a lot out of meeting with you today. You've been I just love what you're doing for the jiu-jitsu community, actually. Even when you're taking a step away, you're still contributing. That is also who the members of this community are. They're powerhouses it's in the blood now. It's like motorbikes or something like that. Like once it's in your blood, you can't ever not be a motorbike rider. Once you're
I appreciate the comments. Like it's one of those, it's very, I'm not trying to be humble or anything like this. It actually is a very small thing to contribute relative to what it's given me. And so it's one of those things I'm happy to keep going.
Mm.
So for anyone listening who maybe they're not, their details are not on this, how do they get in touch with you? What's the communication channel?
So right now, like I said, there's no website dedicated to it, but I'll get that fixed eventually. Is if you go onto the Australian BJJ community Facebook page and you just look for Cameron Byrne or you look for BJJ clubs in Australia, every year on the 1st of January I put out a post basically saying, if you want to, you can pop up your club details. If your club details are wrong or you want them amended, feel free to reach out. And that's usually the best way to go about it. Eventually, when I get around to it, it'll be maybe like a form that can be submitted on a web page, an event, and longer term, something that other people can manage themselves and update themselves.
Fantastic. So there's already like 600 something on there, so most people will.
Yeah, and I think last I checked, I think we've got about 69,000 views on that map. And you can imagine I've been reached out by every gi manufacturer in the world now saying, can we have a list of your clubs? but also had some MMA fighters as well that want to plan their seminars around it, so it's been really constructive and really useful for that as well.
Wow, very interesting. That is a great way to monetize it, perhaps, is like that, you know, and like not selling the data, but actually enabling people to purchase things or do tours of those clubs and those clubs could benefit. That's interesting. Because I actually think, like, I know we're almost out of time, but the jiu-jitsu community they don't love to part with money, I find. You know what I mean? But they do have access to great resources, great teams. You know, so if they can get benefits, they also don't mind parting with reasonable amounts of money for reasonable.
Yes, agree.
Yeah. So
yeah, just look at Danaher's system and how well it's done for BJJ fanatics.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And just for the last 2 minutes or so, Cameron, do you have any parting words for our listeners? Any final thoughts?
It's strange that you mentioned that. I actually pulled up a quote and I wasn't going to say it, but now I'm going to say it because it's something that when we're talking about how hard it is being a jiu-jitsu person, I'm actually going to paste in the chat because I don't know if I'm going to get through it all, especially in 2 minutes. But it's something that I've always, one second, there's two parts to it. I want to pop it up. One and two. I can't even tell you who to credit this to. It was a Facebook post somewhere. I want to try and go through it in 2 minutes. I don't care much about belts, nor am I defined by them. I've never won any world titles. I work for a living, but I make time. This art has caused me countless injuries, built many relationships, lost many relationships, sacrificed other pursuits, put aside financial ambitions for simple ones. It takes me a few days to get over one really hard day of training. I have to admit to myself that I'm not special. I constantly get beaten up by people who started after me but have already surpassed my ability. It's made me upset, sad, happy, sore, upset, happy, tired, frustrated, and curious. I keep training and I don't know why. Ultimately, I have this sense that somehow training makes me a better person. You won't see me win any world titles, but I will say I know myself a little bit better each time I train. I know myself more than I did the day before. My reason for training isn't to be a champion, and that's okay because somehow martial arts is the best expression of who I am as an individual. It is for me an expression of life. I don't do it for pleasure. I do it for a better reason. I do it because it's important. I do it because it's hard. My greatest obstacle was never any opponent. It was myself. My greatest achievement wasn't a title or a belt. It was never stopping.
I have goosebumps, man. Thank you so much. Awesome. Wow.
We should not be my able quote. To get a tagline out of that one. We've got to get at least one tagline, Antoine, out of that podcast, for the podcast.
Goodness. We're making a short out of that, actually. We're going to promote that. That's going to be a new wow. Thank you so much. Like, I don't think anybody knows it's such an effort into a finishing quote, man. My mind is blown.
No worries.
Thank you so much. Beautiful. Thanks
very much.
And
guys,
we'll have this episode out in a couple of weeks. And if you could share it, that'd be awesome. And look forward to seeing you on the mats.
Woo. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Share the link as well on the page as well when we put that out.
I'm all tingly.
See you guys.
Cheers. Bye.